What's up, everybody? Welcome back. Happy Skews Day to you. It's March 12th, 2024. I'm Trey. That's Mark. How you doing there, Mark?
Good, man. Got a fun show. We're going to talk about the State of the Union, the vibes-based response to it, and Katie Britt telling one of the wildest lies in American public discourse. It takes a while to unpack. So that's what we're going to do, talk about how full of shit she is and upside down. But a couple things before we get to the show. Kate Middleton is either dead or AWOL, so the British royal family is now accepting applications to be the Princess of Windsor if anybody wants to throw their hat in the ring and do like a reverse Lady King Ralph situation.
Yes. and just so y'all know, we're not going to go any further into that because this is a serious program. We talk about like stuff that actually matters in the world and not the British royals. But if you want to watch a stupid program and we talk about all kinds of shit that don't matter in the world, me and Corey are going to be talking about this on Putting On Airs this week. Look at Matt. He got the thing up there. He knew I was going to plug it. But yeah, I told Corey earlier, I was like, I need you to explain this Kate Middleton shit to me, because Corey is like, he's one of them. It's like he rags on America's fascination with the royal family, but also he does kind of keep up with it all. Like, and so I told him, I was like, I know you know what's going on here and I want to talk about it. So we're going to be doing that, but that's for a whole other thing. So
Americans who are fascinated with the British royal family, what incredibly cucked behavior. Like fought a war, so you didn't have to do that. Anyway, whatever.
And at a certain point it becomes like, I don't know if, my rationalization really played, but I am fascinated with the American fascination with the royal family. Do you know what I mean? Because of what you just said, I agree completely, but I find that a lot of time that ends up with you still kind of knowing what's going on with it or whatever. So it's like, you kind of end up in the same, it's like a horseshoe effect or something, even though fuck them. I ain't about no kings,
It's a perfect Putting On Airs discourse because it fits in the Venn diagram between trash shit and rich people shit. Because if you're trash, somebody's baby mama just disappears for a couple months. You're like, oh, well, she probably went to Atlantic City or Myrtle Beach or something. Yeah, right. So another thing, Boeing whistleblower killed himself, and everyone's being very sane about it, of course. And if anyone cares, he'd already done a ton of his whistleblowing over the last 5 years. And yeah, we've all seen Michael Clayton, but the important distinction here is they killed Arthur before he blew the whistle. So the only thing Boeing would get out of, like, he was in the middle of a defamation suit of them, like, you know, ruining his job prospects over being a whistleblower. So that, like, the only thing they would have saved was defamation money, if anybody cares, as far as I know.
I just feel like, because obviously I believe you, I defer to you on this type of thing, but I feel like some people could make the arguments like in Russia, if you cross Putin, even if you publicly cross him and you get across what you meant to say, then you get defenestrated, it still is because you did that. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm not saying this dude got Epstein. I'm just saying there's a punitive nature of that theory that I feel like you're kind of discounting a little bit when you say, like, oh, he already did everything he could do. You know, so it could be teaching a lesson type of thing.
So Corey brought this up last night, and it's sort of weird. It's like if you believe in this conspiracy theory, you're deeply paranoid, but you're also sort of believe that justice exists because you're like, they killed him to get away with it. It's like, they are getting away with it. Look at the fucking newspaper. They don't have to do anything. Right. It's like, okay. There's a bunch of people are calling up their congressmen and threatening to commit suicide if they ban TikTok, which they're not banning TikTok. We're going to get into all that on this week's Patreon episode, I think, unless something supersedes it. But I wanted to read you this quote here from a serious opinion piece in Canada's National Conservative newspaper. This take is all over the right wing. Mm. Quote, are Sydney Sweeney's breasts double D harbingers of the death of woke? This is because all these think pieces have been floating around the last 2 weeks, a week and a half since she hosted SNL. And I just want, I'll read that quote to you again, and I want you to guess how in the world Sydney Sweeney's cleavage could possibly be a savior for Western civilization. Are Sydney Sweeney's breasts double D harbingers of the death of woke? Tell me how it connects.
Okay. So first of all, I want to start out by saying, I feel like the right wing, they're the Christian side, the Christian conservative side. They're the ones that want like a Handmaid's Tale universe. Do you know what I mean? They're the ones that want women to be covered up from head to toe. If you're showing like jihadist style rules, if you're showing an ankle, that's, you know, unlimited whorery right there. But so that, having said that, I assume their argument is because it's like, oh, we can't make beer commercials with twins with big titties in them anymore? Is that what it is? Like, I know how, yeah, y'all don't like it, us treating women like pieces of meat and objectifying them on a grand scale. But now that this woman who has titties is in public, checkmate, motherfuckers. Like, that's my guess.
That's sort of it, but that's sort of like the white trash version of it. In the mind space of like the bow tie fascists, the kind of people who like have deeply weird conservative beliefs, but also like have PhDs and use words like epistemology and quote St. Thomas Aquinas. All right. So basically it's this, it's the kind of people who get mad when they see plus size models and people of color on the cover of a Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue and think it's a cause of Western civilization. So they literally think wokeness has canceled being a hot blonde with big boobs.
Right. They never went nowhere. Hot blondes with big boobs, don't call it a comeback, baby. They never went away. Like, they've been here the whole time. The only thing the left ever tried to argue as far as that goes, I feel like, was like, maybe some other types of people also. And they were like, nope, absolutely not. Just that. But blondes with big titties they've been doing just fine all throughout the woke mind virus spreading across America and all that. They've still been doing just fine. So I don't really see how it changes too overly much, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you combine repression with also being deeply horny and thinking that your people aren't making you horny enough. And then you use big words to write about it anyway. So Sydney Sweeney didn't do anything to ask for any of this, by the way. So
of course not. She just looks how she looks. Yeah. It's not her fault.
All right, let's talk about secret societies, bud. We got a new one just dropped. Talking Points memo got a hold of some internal documents in The Guardian also from a new secret society of Christian nationalists that call themselves the Society for American Civic Renewal, which they pronounce SACR among themselves. They're preparing for a new regime to be established after a national divorce. Membership requirements: you have to be male, a Trinitarian Christian, which I didn't even look up what that means, heterosexual, an unhyphenated American, and can answer questions about Trump, the Republican Party, and Christian nationalism in the right way. Their goal is to secure a future for Christian families. These are heads of like various right-wing think tanks and rich people. Also, one of the requirements is also you have to be rich.
Right. And that does seem important. But yeah, an unhyphenated American. Does that just mean pure white, or do they mean a different type of thing? Like,
I think it means pure white,
right? So pure, also, white, pure white, rich Christian, straight conservative. So just the same people that have been running,
except you can't even
the government for forever now.
We're back to you can't even be Irish American, so the Irish are back out, baby. They're recruiting a brotherhood who will quote form the backbone of a new American regime and quote understand the nature of authority and its legitimate forceful exercise, whose objectives are to collect, curate, and document a list of potential appointees and hires for a renewed American regime. God, I hate the word regime. One of the guys is in leadership of it. He's from the Claremont Institute. His name's Haywood. He went on a podcast with a former Trump official. A guy wrote a very famous essay called the Flight 93 election, which basically it's worth taking the country down in flames like Flight 93 went down in order to keep Hillary Clinton from being president. The guy's name is Michael
Lantau. Okay.
They talked for a couple hours about the need for Caesarism, the need for a new American Caesar. And they decided to start this organization after a unspecified secret event, which I don't know what that is. I'm assuming Biden rigging the election or something.
They probably don't know either. I feel like that's part of their plan is this starts after an unspecified secret event that they've got. They've got cooking up. Yeah, I'm not all that worried about it. But also it's like, so Caesarism, they want a new American Caesar. It's wild to want to be the next Caesar, to want a new Caesar, considering like what happened to Caesar pretty shortly after that whole thing went down. And I know, and maybe it's like Trump is a worthy sacrifice or something. Cause like Caesar, we all know Caesar got assassinated, but they did still continue to be a dictatorship after that, like an empire. It was a republic. And then they continued to be an empire after Caesar took over, but then he got killed. But I'm just saying it's wild to look at that period of Roman history and be like, you know, this is the part of it that we need to implement here.
Yeah, America. But the, the defining feature of modern American conservatism is you never think about what comes next, right? It's right. You just overthrow the republic because, you know, you can't pass anti-pronoun laws or whatever through the Senate. So,
right.
The head of the Dallas chapter of SACR is a guy named Nate Fisher. He's talks about being at war with the U.S. government, but he's also the owner of an ammunition company, which of course he is. But he contracts the federal government. It's like, buddy, you are the government. You're trying to overthrow yourself. But my takeaway is, we're just doing the 1920s again, buddy. We got secret societies. We got a new Gilded Age. We got a ton of the population can't read for shit. Planes are falling out of the sky. Corporations barely paying taxes. All we need to do is bring prohibition back so I can like fire up my great grandfather's still and make some real money again. Like, let's get it going.
Yeah, it's wild. You know, yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. they say things are cyclical, but I don't know if this is what we all meant. But also, they actively want that. They want to return to that time period or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Cause I think you could still die from everything back then. You know what I mean? Like it was just on the frontier of American medicine and whatnot. But they hate current American medicine. they hate science and all that stuff. So I guess it's fine, but it's easy to think that until you get polio prior to the vaccine being available or post the vaccine being outlawed. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden I feel like people change their tune, but
I mean, if anybody from SACR is watching, I'm open to be invited to a meeting to see what it's all about. I want to wear like a red masquerade ball mask and like watch an orgy and talk about plotting a coup. Let's do it.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into it. So producer Matt is with us doing his thing. As always, this is Weekly Skews. Before we continue, I want to remind y'all, of course, of a few things. First of all, if you want to see me do stand-up comedy live in the flesh, and you should, it's a good time. Go to treycrowder.com. Check out all my upcoming dates. We just added a bunch of dates to the website, and we're still adding more every week. So check that out. Yeah, I've got a little bit of time off here, but my next shows are in Vancouver and then Seattle, Washington. So come see me there, and if I'm coming near you, come on out. It'll be fun. TreyCrowder.com. Also on TreyCrowder.com, you can find a link to me and Corey's book, Round Here and Over Yonder, a front porch travel guide. It's a silly travelogue across these United States and also England and Scotland, and you can get us reading the book on Audible if you're into that sort of thing. Lastly, if you like this program and would like to show your support, you can do so by signing up on Patreon. You go to weeklyskews.com/more. Or go on Patreon and search for my name. Either way, you'll find it. $5 a month gets you access to full-length bonus episodes. Like Mark just said, he teased it. Hell, I'm looking forward to it. We're going to talk a little bit later this week about what did you say we're going to talk about, Mark?
The Congress's efforts to force Chinese Communist Party-owned company to divest from TikTok. It's bringing out all the stupid and a lot of people. Yeah.
So that's the kind of thing we talk about, things that, like, you know, don't make the main show or things that happen in between or just other stuff we want to talk about. 2 episodes a month. It's a lot of fun. So go on there, go on weeklyskews.com/more, sign up, get some more skews in your life and support the show in the process. Now, with that said, tonight, as Mark said, we're going to be talking a little later about perhaps the most unhinged response to a State of the Union address in living memory from Alabama Senator Katie Britt. It was wild and almost something approaching human-like, but not quite. And we'll get to that a little later. We got a lot of things to talk about first, beginning, of course, with the Daily Dumbass. Matt, graphic, please. Tonight's DD, anyone who thinks you shouldn't believe a lawyer over your own lying eyes. This is former special counsel Robert Herr, who's been in front of Congress this week. Go ahead.
And I want to give you a chance, since the transcript is out, to correct the record on an important point. Very sadly, your report on page 208 says that Mr. Biden couldn't come up with the date, the year of his son, Beau Biden's death, when in fact in the transcript it shows that you asked him the month. And do you know what he said, Mr. Herr? He said, oh God, May 30th. Would you like to correct the record? His memory was pretty firm on the month and the day.
Congresswoman, I don't believe that's correct with respect to the transcript, but if you could refer me to a specific page, I'd be happy to look.
And my second document, to clarify for you, sir, Mr. Herr, from the transcription, page 82, the words are President Biden's. What month did Beau die? Oh, God, May 30th. A searing memory. Right. I ask unanimous.
So that was a central anecdote from a couple weeks ago and all the stories about how Joe Biden's like fully senile from this report. Yeah. Put out. It's like to recap, Robert Herr put out a 350 some page report about how Joe Biden was innocent of stealing documents. And then also threw in his top line summary, this stuff about how like he suffered memory problems. And then the transcript comes out, shows that he does remember it. And the guy's like, I don't remember him remembering that. Which seems to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Anytime they like, I can't believe that the star witness in some other Joe Biden ain't fit or is criminal, you know, trial that they're trying to put on in Congress has turned out to be full of shit. You know what I mean? Like, who would have thought? It's like, this just keeps happening. But what frustrates the shit out of me about this is like, just knowing that it won't have any impact on how they feel, treat, or think about Joe Biden as it pertains to this going forward. Do you know what I mean? It feels like none of it had, like, they're still going to keep thinking the exact same things they've always thought. Like, same thing with the Russian agent and stuff, and Biden being, you know, compromised. It's like that got not only disproven, but that guy got publicly shamed and you know, outed as being an actual Russian agent. But that they still think that it's the Biden crime family. And it's the same thing here, I'm assuming, despite the fact we're going to talk about the State of the Union more later. But like, in the wake of his State of the Union address, which didn't seem very senile-y to me, but also this guy getting like outed as a fraud on this stage for declaring him senile, it just won't. I don't think any of that'll matter or get through. I mean, maybe to some people, maybe enough to count for something.
Well, it's more like, to me, it's more of a media process story or something, where like, you used to be able to kind of be like a fairly informed citizen just by reading headlines and a couple, the first few article paragraphs in an article.
Yes.
Like the headlines coming out of this were like, hearing adds new context to claims about Joe Biden's mental competence or something like that.
Right.
Adds context.
Exactly.
It's like, yes. So if you just read the headline, you think, oh, there's more evidence of, but it's not, you know, it's actually the opposite.
And that's not hyperbole, right? Like, that really did used to be true, what you just said. Mm-hmm. Like, back, like before, I don't know, the rise of like Rush Limbaugh style AM radio and then Roger Ailes and Fox and whatever thing that came out of that, before that all happening in like the mid to late 90s, people on both sides, if they saw a headline from, you know, an ostensibly reputable news source, or saw a chyron on news coverage or whatever, you on either side, you didn't really question the veracity of it, right? You were like, oh, that must be at least in part.
I mean, people used to burn newspapers in the Civil War South, and like there was like, I mean, it's like, it's not always, but I'm just saying, like, you used to be able to like, you trust if you're a sane person reading a sane newspaper, you could trust that like the headline wasn't a mirror version of reality.
Yeah.
Like, so just,
yeah. Well, I mean, I guess there was, you know, I mean, fucking William Randolph Hearst and the rise of yellow journalism, which was 100 years before that. So I guess the roots go deeper, but still, you know, there was,
yeah, the paranoid side of whatever. Yeah. You got the John Birch Society. Like, it's like people have always been a little bit nuts, but like when you talk about add context to this, I want to read this exchange to you. His question: you said to President Biden, you appear to have a photographic understanding and recall. Did you say that? Her, those words do appear in the transcript. Question: but they never appeared in your report. Her, it does not appear in my report. So like, it's like the context it adds is this guy's report was absolutely full of shit, right?
Left out. So, yeah. A lot of pertinent information and whatnot.
So Matt, throw this image up here, this screen grab of a Wall Street Journal headline. So the Wall Street Journal ran 17 stories about Biden's mental fitness in the 4 days following the Herr report. After reviewing the transcript, the paper concludes it shows Biden, quote, veering into frequent digressions, but not stumped on basic factual questions. So he veers off into side topics, which we just did on the show for 5 minutes.
I was about to say, far be it for me, bro. I'll be the last person to ever go after somebody for veering off into random digressions or whatever, because I'm a I definitely have a penchant for that myself. And also, you know, if he's doing good on the factual questions part, then that means he's doing better than me too. Right. I struggle with those sometimes.
I mean, yeah, hell, maybe we're senile. That's fine. So the thing about this that bugs me is, like, her is a Republican, which is fine as far as it goes. And every special counsel, whether they're investigating a Democrat or Republican, is always going to be a Republican. I don't know where we got that rule from, but it's always that way. And every special counsel that's investigated a Democrat for my entire life has always been a horseshit rat fucking operation, right?
Right.
Right. It's like the Lewinsky affair news,
yep,
of like Whitewater, which was a bullshit land deal that the Clintons lost money on. It lasted like 5 years. And it was like, what the fuck,
right,
here? Anyway, so her, who he is a former clerk to right-wing judges, and he was appointed by the Trump administration, all right? So all that context I gave you, you just do not have to take him at face value, but everyone just keeps taking all these people at face value. Like, the report comes,
right,
no one's like, well, what's the context of this guy's motives?
I mean, it's kind of like you said a minute, it's like, we should all know at this point to question these types of sources, whatever thing, but it's like a lot of people are still operating under, you know, the presumption that things are the way they used to be. Like you were saying, again, I don't know if they even were the way they used to be, but they weren't as bad as they were now. But it's like, I don't know. It's like, oh, this dude has this fancy job. He's sitting in front of Congress saying this stuff. We can trust this guy. We can trust what he's saying, but that's, we should all know better than that by now. I think you should question, like you said, people's motives and their background and what they're trying to do. And all of that.
But a lot of the Washington press corps, it's not all of them, but they seem to think their job is just write down what people say and that's the end of it. And we're going to talk about it with Katie Britt too, because the story that took down her one of their main anecdotes in her speech did not come from a mainstream publication. No one bothered. It was just the vibes, the performance, and what people said about her performance. None of it engaged with the content of any of it. It's like, it's very crazy. So it's like, this guy says this, I don't know, and everybody moves on. It's fucking crazy. If you want to further doubt his motives or whatever, he resigned like yesterday, so he would not be constrained by DOJ oversight or ethical guidelines. So over and over again, we were all born yesterday. But like the thing about this too is, like, because the bulk of the report exonerated Biden for not doing anything illegal, Republicans were mad at him too. Right. Here's a video. This is Representative Scott Fitzgerald, a Republican from Wisconsin, if you have this video, Matt.
Gentleman yields back. Gentleman from Wisconsin is recognized.
Attorney Herr, Webster's dictionary defines senile as exhibiting a decline of cognitive ability, such as memory associated with old age. Mr. Herr, based on your report, did you find that the president was senile?
I did not. That conclusion does not appear in my report, Congressman.
All right. So Ken Buck, Republican from Colorado, who used to be a lunatic, but the lunatics have moved so far away from him, like he can't even stand anymore. He just announced,
right,
he just announced he's retiring from Congress. Here's what Buck said after that exchange. What I've observed in this hearing is that one side thinks you're trying to get Trump elected, and the other side thinks you're trying to get President Biden elected. Welcome to Congress. Now,
right,
this is in front of the House Judiciary Committee. It's important to remember the context here is this is part of their impeachment effort, right? We're so far away from what the thing is supposed to be about that it's like, what are we even, what's the point of this anymore? And Ken Buck pointed to this in his when he was asked about his resignation, or he's not running for re-election. He said, we've taken impeachment and we made it to a social media issue as opposed to a constitutional concept. This place keeps going downhill and I don't need to spend any more time here.
Tell me the lie, buddy. I mean, I'm saying, it's like you said, it's like that guy, you know, by 20 years ago standards would be, you know, near the lunatic end of the spectrum. But now, you know, this guy speaking, so even he, like you said, even he is like, I can't handle this shit anymore. The Cornice herself says, is Mark's audio glitching? Mark, I don't know what you could do about that. I have noticed it, but I thought it was my headphones because I've had problems with these headphones recently. So I thought it was just me. But if it isn't just me, if you guys can hear that too, I don't know. Make sure your plugs are plugged in appropriately or whatever. I don't know what to tell you, but I have been hearing it. I thought it was these though. I didn't think it was you, but I guess
people otherwise
can hear it too.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, my setup's all normal. I don't know what I've been doing about it. Somebody saw, like, click in the comments real quick. And somebody said there's an echo, but it's the normal. Yeah, I don't know. You want me to leave and come back?
All right. I don't know. I mean, sorry for all this. Y'all would do this show live. Matt, what? Matt said, Mark, refresh your browser while Trey plugs the two or whatever. So, yeah, Matt noticed this earlier. So, yes, refresh it, come back, and I'll just run my mouth for a second. So, anyway, yeah, it's weird. This guy, it is kind of like what, you know, we say on the, oh, you can't. You're both pointing out this guy is full of shit, but also saying, well, even he said that Biden is not senile, but I don't think that that is inconsistent, frankly. I think it's more like a guy who has a narrative he's trying to plug still isn't willing to go so far as to say that he's actually senile, you know? So I think that's how we should look at it. Mark, you're back now. Mark's back. Hey.
Hello. 10-4. Copy, yeah. Good buddy. Am I still echoing? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. I hear you okay now. It wasn't a heck echo for me. You were like, it was like a, like, you know, like a drive-through window type of thing. But for now, you sound all right. So anyway, let's move into our honorable mentions for Daily Dumbass. The first one is people who think it's weird to hang out with Jeffrey Epstein when in reality, he fit right in. This is RFK Jr. giving a wild quote. Matt, you got this.
Yeah. So, and you run into everybody in New York. I mean, I knew Harvey Weinstein. I knew Roger Ailes. I knew O.J. Simpson came to my house. Yeah. Bill Cosby came to my house. Yeah. So, and you run into.
My God. So, I don't mean nothing. I hung out with Jeffrey Epstein. Me and Kevin Spacey shared a pool boy. I gave you Joran Vandersloot, yeah, my travel miles. What the fuck?
I actually used to be babysat by Pol Pot, funnily enough. Pol Pot was my nanny as a kid.
We used to get Pol Pot, Henry Kissinger, and the captain of the Exxon Valdez together to play cards. So he parties with Phil Spector. This is like also fucking, it's like the idea he's saying, my uncle was president, my dad was the attorney general. Of course we were surrounded by war criminals and perjurers.
Right.
You're so close to getting it, buddy.
I know, that's what I was about to say. I was like, the thing is, it's kind of like I just said, amigo, it's like, show me the lie. You know what I mean? It's like, it does totally track, like, for that exact reason. But it's also like, that plays right into, you know, what the most insane conspiracy theorists think about the way, you know, the elites work and all this stuff or whatever else. And there's like some truth to it, but they'll take it and run a mile with it. But also while defending this guy, I assume largely across the board, you know, so there's just no real logical consistency with any of it. But it's like George Carlin said, it's a big club and or it's a small club, but you ain't in it type of thing. Well, yeah, he's in it, you know.
There's a report out this week that's like woman who was like, when she was a teenager, was groomed by Jeffrey Epstein, was one of his victims. And then when she was 20 years old, she's in the tabloids dating Donald Trump. And these people are the conspiracy, they're supporters of the conspiracy theorists. It's the conspiracy theorists are supporting RFK. It's like, how do the two things exist in your head in the same time? I don't fucking know. So there's a new polling out about the third parties, and it's a little bit, this is going to be one of the weirdest elections, at least since 92 or 96. I mean, it's going to be weird, the weirdest anyway, because Trump's in it. But RFK Jr. is polling well enough to get into the televised debates if there were going to be televised debates, but neither Trump nor Biden seem to want them. So there probably won't be, or maybe they'll have them. It'll just be RFK showing up. So he's polling like 15% in a national average of a three-way race as of March 11th. Kennedy West, Cornel West, Jill Stein, and the other also rams are garnering an average of 17% polling averages, which means that like Biden or Trump could win with 45% of the vote. And if Kennedy improves his standing at all, or if No Labels finds a candidate because they can't find one, even though they have ballot spots in a bunch of states, somebody could win this election with less than 40%. And to try to get there, to make sure that, America doesn't have a majority elected president, RFK Jr. is looking for his running mate. He needs one soon to get on ballots in a lot of states. And he's looking at none other than Aaron Rodgers and Jesse Ventura.
Okay. This is real. I'm just saying, yes. This ain't a bit or nothing. This is real. No. Those are his two front runners.
This is the New York Times.
Yeah.
This is coming from RFK. Like, this is a source news campaign. Right. Representatives did not respond to requests for comment. But RFK Jr. Recently approached the NFL quarterback Aaron Rodgers and a former Minnesota governor and wrestler Jesse Ventura by serving as his running mate and eventual presidential ticket. Welcome the overture, as two people familiar with the discussion said.
Dude,
Rodgers is committed to starting for the New York Jets in the football season. That's what I was about to say.
It's like I know a lot of our people are not big sports fans or whatever, don't keep up with football and stuff, but just take it from me. It would be so funny from a football fan perspective if, like, because the New York Jets and their history of despair and incompetence and everything, they brought this guy in to finally have a chance to compete. The first season, he runs out there waving an American flag, blows his Achilles out four plays into the season and misses the whole thing. He's changed the whole look of their organization. They bring in whoever he wants. He's basically the GM there. He's running things there. And they're like, well, he's going to be back next year. He'll be back next year. It's fine. And then if the next year he's distracted by running for vice president with RFK Jr. in the most absurd election in American history, like, it's just, it's sad from the perspective of being an American, but as a football fan, it would also be fucking hilarious to me. Dude,
I don't
if that happened.
The NFL schedule for next season hasn't come out yet, but can you imagine if it's like some polling data in October that shows that RFK is pulling more votes from Trump than he is Biden, and the Jets are playing the 49ers, and famous MAGA psycho Nick Bosa dives at Aaron Rodgers' knees?
right. Yeah.
Oh, God, that'd be so funny. Anyway, so RFK Jr.'s main thing is being anti-vax, right? Although he's also like anti-Palestinian and then has a grab bag of like left-wing issues and whatever. He's all over the place, but anyway, here's Trump attempting to shore up his anti-vax flank at a rally a couple days ago, if you got this, Matt.
And I will not give one penny to any school that has a vaccine mandate or a mask mandate.
Make America mumps again, Trey. I find this so baffling. Like, anybody, like, I wish anybody who's super anti-vax. And I read an article this week that's pretty interesting. Is like the women who tend to be anti-vax have been mistreated by the medical establishment and therefore distrustful of doctors. And I sympathize with that. But also, like, just go read a history book and see what life was like before vaccines. People didn't have 14 kids because they had a bunch of extra food around. Right. I just want to say that. So, like,
absolutely.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, it's such a wild thing for you to feel it's necessary to say. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you like go back. If we went back to the time of polio and all that, and with vaccines came out and were seen as like a miracle, like a literal miracle. Thank God this has happened. And I feel like nobody, those people back then, I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like no matter what their political leanings were at the time, if you told them that 100 years later down the road, we would be like, no, you can't trust these fucking vaccines. You got to get out of it. You know, like, you can't do that. I think those people would call us dumbasses, you know, and they barely knew what math was back then. So
there's probably no more scientific advancement that's been better for human life and lifespan than the invention of vaccines and inoculations. Like, right. there's nothing else that rivals it. My mom remembers when the polio vaccine rolled out, and her dad took her the day it came out to like the local, it was being dispensed at the fire department. She remembers them waiting in line the first day because they knew it, like, my grandfather had an eighth grade education and so he trusted, like, the doctors and the president said to get it.
Right.
Which is a bit naive, but still it made sense at the time. And he was like, well, I don't know more than a fucking doctor. And he was the 1960s. So he wasn't able to get a PhD in the internet. It's just like, somehow a guy with an eighth grade education was smarter than a bunch of people with computer, like that. Computers more powerful than they used to get to the moon.
Exactly. So, That's what I was trying to say. So thank you for yes, Claire. Cause yeah, it's so wild, man. All right. But so side note, I hope everybody's experiencing the same thing. Producer Matt says that the audio issues have been fixed. So I think we're good now, Mark. So with that said, let's get into talking about the State of the Union and the response there too from the Republicans, particularly in the form of Alabama Senator Katie Britt.
Yeah, so Katie Britt told a lie so brazen and full of shit that it's one of the most cynical things I've ever seen. And it's the kind of lie that is like reality turned upside down, not just the opposite of the truth, but like the opposite of like everything. And it's like the kind of lie that takes like 30 seconds to tell, but like 10,000 words to unpack. But I want to try to do it in less than that. But first, let's talk about Biden for a little bit. And in case you're wondering, here's what Trump spent the entirety of the State of the Union doing. Playing with Snapchat filters, if you got this, Matt.
Goodbye, America. Some trade rules. Buy America has been the law since 1933. Also caps and won't even go into effect until 2025.
Oh my God.
It's like,
by the way,
this
that
is,
law
I mean,
was written
and the benefit expires in 2025.
It's not that.
If you're watching the audio feed, it's like it gives him like Pinocchio noses, and now he's a Chihuahua.
Now he's a Chihuahua. Yeah. Yes, that, yeah, it's like it's not that. That's not just sort of funny in a vac. Like if my 11-year-old, if I made him watch the State of the Union and he had his tablet out or whatever, and then he showed me, hey, look at this. What do you think of this? I would think it was fucking hilarious and awesome, right? I would be, you know, it would crack me the fuck up, you know, but he's 11. Like, this is the Republican nominee for president doing this. And I do feel like that makes a little bit of a difference. And people are like, no, Trump's hilarious. I'm like, dude, this is not, what is the bar for hilarious anymore? Like, this is, anyone can do this. It ain't like this is like fucking, you know, I wanted to say Dave. It's not like this is like Chris Rock style incisive, you know, comedic commentary or whatever. It's just fucking around with chat, Snapchat filters that anybody can do. And this dude is running for president. Like, it's wild. It is funny, but it's funny because of how patently absurd it is.
Yeah, it's funny in context because the guy wants to be the most powerful person in the world, and apparently a bunch of people are willing to hand him the keys to that, even though this is the level of intellect we're operating. He thinks that's fucking hilarious, and it is, but also, like you said, it takes the creativity or whatever.
Right.
So State of the Union, the coverage is all vibe-based, and because Republicans lowered the bar so far, like basically all Biden had to do was show up, not shit his pants, not wander off stage or forget where he was, and it was going to be an A+, and he cleared that bar by a significant margin, so of course, their takeaway was that he's on drugs, which
that's what was funny to me about it was like I felt like they were all waiting on him to go out there and, like you said, you know, poop his diaper in front of the whole world and just like forget we do a Mitch McConnell or whatever with an ice cream cone in his hand or something. Like that's what they were all waiting on to happen. And I felt like not only did he not do that, I thought he did a pretty good job and did a pretty good gave a pretty good example of oration on on a very large scale. And so then, like you said, the response to it, a lot of the response I saw immediately after was like Joe Biden was far too fiery and divisive and energetic. He must have been on drugs. It's like Sleepy Joe, their thing was like, oh, he was being real angry and mean and forceful, and therefore he must be on drugs beyond that. But the goalpost fucking just, you can't keep up with where the goalposts are in this narrative. They're all over the place.
Aesthetically, it was it was fine to me. Like, as far as the actual content of the speech, I'm not sure if it was in the teleprompter, if you called it ad lib, but he used the word illegal, then had to walk it back a little bit in interviews after, talking about undocumented immigrants. Now, like, I don't really get super into language policing, but there are people who are offended by that, so I'm glad he walked it back a little bit. He also, like, so on the way in, he was going to be talking about immigration in his speech, and I guess Marjorie Taylor Greene knew he was going to talk about Lincoln Riley, the nursing student who was killed by a Venezuelan migrant in Atlanta. And she did the say her name thing, which, like, say her name was coined by a Black Lives Matter activist to encourage people to not forget there are female victims of police violence. And Marjorie Taylor Greene is, like, they've learned woke, they've learned say her name. Anyway, Joe Biden did what she said, took the button she had that had Lincoln Riley on it, and when he said it, it sounded like he said Lincoln Riley, which some people said that Marjorie Taylor Greene said Lincoln Riley to him, so she might have said it wrong. But anyway, Lincoln Riley is a football coach.
Yeah,
it's different USC. Than Lincoln Riley.
Yeah.
And Pat McAfee, the sports personality, was very confused watching State of the Union. He thought that someone had killed Lincoln Riley.
Well, dude, to be fair, I knew where this was going, and when you first got into it and said Lincoln Riley's name for the first time, I kind of heard Lincoln Riley even. I mean, they're pretty goddamn close, just phonetically speaking. It's not that crazy. It's not like her name is Lincoln Riley, and he said Nick Saban was murdered by an immigrant. Like, they're not that far off. It's not that egregious of a mistake.
If a migrant killed Nick Saban, 49 states would vote for amnesty. Because of the way the State of the Union goes now, Biden got heckled a few times. People wore like Marjorie Taylor Greene wore a MAGA hat, which I didn't know you were allowed to wear a hat inside Congress, but whatever. I was going to enforce the rules, I guess. But like people wearing weird outfits, like some guy who used to be a moderator is wearing a T-shirt with Trump's mugshot on it and a MAGA bow tie. I don't know. Yeah. Weird fucking country.
So right absurd.
Now. Not much more to really say about the State of the Union itself, I don't have anything to say about it. You can go read about it if you want. But like the it did change the vibes because it was like basically Joe Biden has proved the haters wrong by not being, but not
drooling. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's get to Katie Britt's deeply weird response. Since we're talking about vibes here, Joe Biden got good reviews for his vibes. Here were Katie Britt's vibes. If you want to get discuss this.
I never could have imagined what my story would entail. To think about what the American dream can do across just one generation, in just one lifetime, it's truly breathtaking. But right now, the American dream has turned into a nightmare.
All right, you cut it.
So
dude, she's like, it's like, and other people point out, but so like Stepford wife-y or whatever. It's like she seems like a poorly programmed trad wife robot trying to like express human emotions or whatever. Like, that's the whole thing plays like that to me.
There's also a theater kid aspect to this where like the delivery store, you ever like go to like a high school play and they're doing like, I don't know, what's the Streetcar Named Desire, and you've got these teenagers talking about all these super adult emotions, like being a rejected woman with an abusive husband, or whatever. It's like the tone is just so far off from the material. It's like jarring. Right. It's like this is like what that's like to me.
That's funny. You know, well, I played a Nazi colonel once, like a 45-year-old Nazi colonel in a high school production. Super heavy. Like I'm handling all the themes of the Holocaust and stuff at 17 years old, me with my wispy mustache, everything. So yeah, no, that's a good call on your part. It does feel like that. You're right.
By the way, this isn't just some like glib liberal takeaway. This was like the live viewing party on one of those Trumpy media networks that basically exists just on YouTube and obscure Roku channels called Real America's Voice. Here's MSNBC showing a clip from their the end of their watch party.
And on Real America's Voice, the right-wing hosts were stunned into silence.
May God bless you, and may God continue to bless these United States of America.
Look.
Yeah, if you're watching the podcast, they're all shrugging. They all think they're heading their hands and shrugging. It's like, what the fuck?
They're like, listen, I like her. I like her, but holy shit. And dude, I'm sorry. That's how you know. I don't know what her or her people are telling her. I don't know what you could possibly tell yourself in the wake of something like this, because this right here, this is proof of just how bad it was. Because these people with their level of delusion and everything, like, they would fake it. They would bullshit. It could be something that was like wholly terrifying to the rest of us, and they would still cheer it on or whatever. But even they are like, oh my God, what the fuck was that? And that's how you know how bad it really was.
So one of my wife's best friends from high school, decided she needed to get a husband, so she turned religious and started going to like a real like evangelical church. And like my wife grew up Catholic and sort of half a Catholic, so she wasn't really familiar with like laying on of hands. And she was like, she gets really weirded out by the wedding and stuff. And like they talked about like that in ceremony, they were talking about how like I will obey you, and the husband is the head of the household and all this stuff.
Yeah, I've been to weddings like that.
And she was like, I've never heard such language. Like, really? Like, it's like every wedding I went to as a kid. But it's like there's also the aspect where like people don't really mean that. Like, it's like, so here's an example of what I'm talking about. So Katie Britt is very Southern evangelical, like rich white lady. She's 42, the youngest woman in the Senate. She just got elected 2 years ago. Her husband, who she met at college at Bama, speaking of Nick Saban, we talked about a little bit earlier, played football for Bama, then played 4 years in the NFL.
He did. Actually, just fun fact. Well, it's a fun fact for me. First Falls game I ever went to in person when I was in high school, watched Tennessee beat her husband's Alabama Crimson Tide in Knoxville.
Go Vols.
That's right, baby. Anyway, yeah, Wesley Britt is his name. Big ass motherfucker. Anyway.
Right. So, but by any objective standard, like, she's a U.S. senator. She's not some sniveling, some weak-willed wife, even though that's the character she's playing right here in this scene where they stashed her in a fucking kitchen. They filmed it in the kitchen.
Right.
Right. So, like, everything about this is so incredibly weird and, like, off-putting to, like, where most Americans are at in 2024. But anyway, let's get to the big lie she told. Here's a clip from the speech, if you got this, Matt. It's, like, 30 seconds long. There's, like, 200 lies in it.
I traveled to the Del Rio sector of Texas. That's where I spoke to a woman who shared her story with me. She had been sex trafficked by the cartels starting at the age of 12. She told me not just that she was raped every day, but how many times a day she was raped. The cartels put her on a mattress in a shoebox of a room, and they sent men through that door over and over again. Hours and hours.
Mark, you absolutely nailed it with that high school theater thing, by the way. Now that you've said that, listening to this with that in my mind, I'm like, that's exactly what this sounds like. It sounds like like a high school junior giving a melodramatic monologue, which, like, the subject matter of this is horrific, but we're going to talk about how it's all misleading and everything also. But just like, it's so badly performative the way she said, again, she just sounds so absurd. Well,
my note here is, if I was directing this baffling theater piece, is like, she's not connecting with the material because she's trying to feign being concerned about this woman while actually not giving a shit about her, which is what she's lying in service of.
Like, yes.
So the woman she's talking about here is named Carla Jacinto Ramiro. And like, just one thing, what Carla Jacinto Ramiro went through is awful. It's just not what Katie Britt is. Right. It didn't happen how Katie Britt's saying it. And Katie Britt's lying intentionally. So the first lie Katie's telling is that Carla Jacinto Ramiro has told the story in public over and over and over again. She's making it sound like this woman confided in her at a secret meeting at the border. That's part of it. She said Ramiro's testified in front of Congress about this before. This is not some like secret story she just discovered. Lie number two, this happened in Mexico, not the United States. Now, I stopped it in the middle because, like, it goes on forever and it's really gross and hard to listen to, and I don't want to torture people with it. But she goes, we would not let this happen in a third world country. We should not let it happen in the United States of America. Okay. But like, it did not happen in the United States of America. It patently did not. The other lie she told, she said it was cartel. She's still sticking to the cartel part of the story, by the way. But Carla Jacinto Ramiro was not trafficked by a cartel. She was groomed by a pimp in Mexico who turned her out on a street corner, which is awful. It's just not, I have no idea.
What she's saying. Right.
Right. She was rescued by a client, a John, I guess, who got her into a halfway house kind of thing. So that's a weird part of the story, but it's a thing that happened. It also happened a decade before Biden was president. She was basically forced to be a prostitute from 2004 to 2008 when George W. Bush was president. Joe Biden was in the Senate. And in case you're wondering if she could have been misled, remember, this happened to this woman when she was between the ages of 12 and 16. She's quite obviously not 12 years old. If you have this picture, Matt, throw it up. Here's what Carla Jacinto Ramiro looks like. That woman is 32. She's not close to being 12 years old. She's a mother of two. All right.
Right.
The big part of the lie, that not the biggest part, but part of this that needs to be told, is the anti-sex trafficking policies that Carla Jacinto Ramiro has been advocating for were thwarted by Donald Trump and then activated under Joe Biden. All right. But here's the biggest evil part of the lie. Like, Carla Jacinto Ramiro, by the way, she still lives in Mexico City, as far as I can tell. She only comes to the U.S. to be an advocate. So Brit stole her story and ran it through a funhouse to advocate for policies that would make it so women like Carla Jacinto Ramiro cannot get asylum to escape human trafficking.
Exactly.
She's co-opting this woman's story in an effort to kill women like her.
Right. And it's like, on the same night as Marjorie Taylor Greene did that performative bullshit about Lake and Riley. Again, Lake and Riley, it's terrible what happened to Lake and Riley. But like, they do not give a fuck about her at all. It's just politically expedient for them in this particular situation to exploit her tragic situation for a narrative. And that's so plain to anybody with eyes, right? Or a heart or any of that. But this is even worse because it's like you said, because of like the implications of what she's using that narrative to further, what she wants to actually happen and what that would mean for people like Ramiro, in reality, in real life. Like, it's just, it's like beyond cynical, dude. It goes beyond cynical into being like, much more gross than just.
I'm trying to think of like, it's like, if I like was telling the story of Anne Frank, and I was like, talk about, well, she was, you know, she died as a result of like a backlash in Germany against like progressive policies. So therefore we should not have, you know, open homosexuality in jazz music, because that was, it's like, what the fuck are you talking about, man? It's like, that's not right. You're the person who would have killed Anne Frank.
Right. If you tried to like use George Floyd to say that we need more intense policing in American cities or something, like, this is why he died, is because the police were not militarized enough and not empowered and emboldened enough in American cities, like that type of thing. That's what she's doing here.
Yeah. So as far as Jacinta Romero's part in this, like, she didn't realize she was a part of this story till Saturday, because she lives in Mexico and probably didn't watch the State of the Union, because I was watching basketball. So like, so she finally heard about this, and she's like, wait, this is fucking horse shit. And CNN got a hold of her. And if you have the video, Matt, of Jacinta Romero speaking for herself, I think it's pretty, you know.
Yes. In fact, I hardly ever cooperate with politicians, because it seems to me that they only want an image. They only want a photo. And that, to me, is not fair.
She's like, it's not fun to go in front of Congress and talk about being sexually assaulted. She does it to try to be an activist to help women who were stuck in the same situation like she was. And here you have a woman stealing it to try to make people like her's lives worse, if not end in their entirety. It's fucking, it's so absolutely fucking gross. And Trey mentioned that Katie Britt's from Alabama, which is an important element of this, because Alabama is, like, we talked about the IVF policy and whatever, but, like, they've gone horrifically anti-immigrant, and it's a reaction to nothing, all right? Like, I read this piece written in an Alabama publication, Katie Britt and the Unreality of Alabama Immigration Rhetoric, and the writer compared it to, like, what if all of Alabama's politics was consumed with, like, talking about doomsday possibilities with the geothermal energy industry. It's like, it doesn't exist in Alabama, but that's all you're talking about. It's fucking crazy. Immigration is not a problem in Alabama. It's 1,000 miles from Mexico and 1,300 miles from Canada. Like the numbers here. So it's like 4% of Alabamians weren't born there, but that's compared to like 11% in Georgia and 22%. Oh, sorry, 4% of the state's population is foreign born, compared to 14% nationwide. Fewer than 6% of Alabamians speak a language other than English in their home. It's 22% of the country in a whole. Like, if you want to compare this, like, you know, cosmopolitan paradise is like Georgia and Florida. Georgia is 11% foreign born, and Florida is 22%. Like, Alabama does not have anything approaching an air quote problem with immigration. All right. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely stupid. But that doesn't change the fact that, like, Katie Britt's, one of her main campaign issues in 2022 was, like, immigration. She filmed an ad on the U.S.-Mexican border. She boasted about all the immigration measures she introduced in her first 3 months in office. Then she went on Fox News Sunday morning and repeated her talking points, claiming she was trying to illustrate what was happening while making a semantic argument about what she meant. She's like, don't pay attention to what I said. Pay attention to what I meant, which was like, you know, we got to get rid of immigrants. Then she said Biden's policies were acting as a magnet for immigrants. It doesn't sound like someone who wants to help people fleeing violence, the kind that she was describing. Like, this is a state where the governor, Kay Ivey, has deployed the National Guard to the border and expresses terror about people learning Spanish if Joe Biden keeps illegal immigrants in our states. Like, oh my God, you have to learn fucking Spanish. Like, that's your nightmare scenario, is having to learn a few words of Spanish. It's like 4%.
Well, it's
4%
like, it's
of Alabamians are foreign born.
It's just the thing that they've, and I know that this is one that they circle back to every now and then. They go between like this and guns and gay people and, you know, poor people and whatever else, but they always come back to immigrants at some point. But like, it's just one of the things that's like, what else are they, and I know you know this, we've talked about it a lot, but what else are they going to run on? Do you know what I mean? Like, they have to run on something. They have to have something to bitch about. That's the other thing too, is they don't want anything to ever actually be fixed, because they can only run on bitching about things that they perceive as being wrong. And even if, like, you know, Matt, producer Matt's fucking home state of South Dakota, their governor, Kristi Noem, they're even further away, much further away from the southern border. And she talks about immigration all the goddamn time. And she takes like a fucking jet to the Mexican border and talks like it's like, you know, ruining the lives of South Dakotans and all this shit. So, I mean, it's just kind of like sort of chapter one of their playbook, but it's so, again, cynical and horse shit and, you know, not surprising, but is upsetting though.
I know we've been doing a lot of immigration related topics lately. And it's not because I personally love talking, like, this is what the powers that be have decided is going to be the national conversation about this election. And I would kill for like a 1990s level campaign that revolved around, should we raise the taxes, in marginal income rates 2% to fund more social services or not? Like, whatever happened to that? You said they have something to run on. They could run on cutting taxes. They could do that.
Right.
They used to do that. So, like, but, like, the thing is, like, I just, like, you talking about Lake and Riley. If Lake and Riley had been killed by a school shooter, they would not be talking about it. If she died from COVID,
absolutely, of course
not. Be talking about it.
Of course, no, I know, right? I mean, dude, what? Look at how many people—not just people, children have been killed by school shooters, and that never once have you seen Marjorie Taylor Greene demand that someone say their name. Not any of them. In fact, when she's been confronted by people who survived those school shootings, she tells them to fuck off, and you know, gets in her limo and leaves or whatever. And it's all just. It's such performative horse shit.
And I do want to say, like, that's what it bugs me is, like, since everybody on both sides decided this is a conversation with this election is going to be out, like, I just wish the Democrats wouldn't take this bait, because you absolutely do not have to meet these people's rhetoric halfway. Here's Trump at a rally the other day, if you want to see what I'm talking about.
The suburban, they always say, suburban housewives, they want something that's very important, security. They don't want illegal immigrants coming into our country. They don't want illegal immigrants knocking on their front door and saying, I'm going to use your kitchen and I'm going to use your bedroom, and there's not a damn thing.
All right, you can cut it back.
That's the nice.
Illegal immigrants are the three Goldilocks now, I guess. Right. They can just come in your house and use your bedroom and your bathroom.
Also, and it's been like with Trump and his construction projects over the years with similar things, like how many super far right, mega rich white Republicans you think in this country employ illegal immigrants and either, you know, like in their business projects or like in their house or on their estates or whatever else. Like, I guarantee you it's a fucking ton of them. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And then they still run their mouth.
I do want to, like, Republicans are defending Katie Brick, saying people are being unfair to her. Like, she's treating her like she's Sarah Palin, which is a funny comparison, but not in the way they mean. But I wanted to talk about the last depressing angle here, which is the collapse of, like, journalism as an industry and as an ongoing enterprise, because Katie Britt's lies were not discovered by anybody covering her response. It was not discovered by the Washington Post, New York Times, or her home state papers in Alabama. It was discovered by a former AP reporter who's now a freelancer slash unemployed, who has a newsletter by the name of Jonathan M. Katz. He had been a fan of his work for a while. He wrote a great book called Gangsters of Capitalism, Smedley Butler, The Marines, The Making and Breaking of America's Empire. So if you guys want to check out that book, if you're interested in Smedley Butler like I am, go buy the book and throw him a few dollars for doing some actual journalism. And he gave this, like, if you're wondering how he got into this, like, he used to be at the Bureau in Haiti, and he covered a lot of stuff going on in Haiti. And Katie Britt's story was from Del Rio. And Del Rio was the place, those photos went viral of Custom and Border Patrol officers on horseback whipping. It looked like they were whipping migrants who were from Haiti. So he'd been to Del Rio reporting on this. And he was like, I know Del Rio. We have to figure this out. And he just had to Google around for like 10 minutes to find press releases from Katie Britt's website. And Marsha Blackburn, I think, was the senator she went on the trip with. And they mentioned Carlo Jacinto Romero. And he went and looked at her testimony, compared it to the speech. And here's a quote from him about the investigation. It was really fast, the fastest investigation I think I've ever done yet. And then he made a 7-minute TikTok about it. And that's why this is the story.
Yeah.
And this guy should be working for the New York Times not the other people who fucking covered it. And the headline of that piece was, there should be newspapers. We work where we do this. Yes, there should.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's not even these like grandiose cover-ups that they do to hide the true nature of what they're talking about or anything. It's like, it's easy to find for anybody that cares to look. It's just so many people in this country just don't care to look, you know, including people in the mainstream media, which is what you're talking about. So yeah, keep that in mind. Look for the truth, y'all. That's what we can say here at the Skews. Thank you guys for watching. I wanted to say, don't forget, like and subscribe, smash that like button, guys, subscribe to the channel. tell your mom and them, and come back next time. Also, go to treycrowder.com and come see me do stand up live. Got a lot of dates coming up in 2024, as usual. It's going to be fun. You can also find me and Corey's book on there, Around Here and Over Yonder, which is a fun little romp. And lastly, sign up on Patreon and get 2 full length bonus episodes of Weekly Skews in your life every month for $5, and you support the show in the process. And lastly, if you guys just watch the show, which we do appreciate, most of y'all do watch the show. If you watch the show and you listen to podcasts at all on your phone or device or whatever, if you would go on your preferred podcast app and subscribe to the show, it don't cost you nothing, but it would make a difference to us and we'd appreciate it. So yeah, get the audio version too. Thank you guys very much. We appreciate it. The main thing is keep coming back on Skews, D's, and we will too. We'll see you in 7 days. Love you. Bye.